and inhale gas into a prison.
This call can you hear?
Monitored and recorded. For customer assistance, collection, or complaint procedures, or to block future calls, dial 1-866-230-7761. To accept this call, press 5 now. To decline this call, hang up. Thank you for using Global Tel Link.
Wow.
Hello.
Hey, Lyle, how are you?
Scott. This is Scott.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
We're doing great. I'm standing here in class, and there's 300 students sitting in front of me ready to listen to you.
Well, you didn't have to tell me that, eh?
Well, don't be nervous.
Well, it's my first time speaking to a crowd outside of a courtroom, so please bear with me.
Well, please go ahead. We're listening to you anxiously, and they're looking at your website as we speak.
Okay, thank you. First, my name is Scott David Allen. I was first charged with capital murder in 1999 and have been here at Central Prison ever since. Fighting to overturn a death sentence is difficult, but I hope here to attempt to explain the appeals process, both how it works and my experience of how it doesn't. All right. The U.S. Supreme Court has never held that a litigant is entitled to, as a matter of right, to have the decision in a case reviewed by an appellate court. The fact that appellate review is available, however, means that a mechanism is in place in which a litigant may be able to have an adverse decision considered and reversed if the required procedures are followed and if the court finds reversible harmful error. By that same mechanism, a court can and most often does dismiss an appeal on procedural grounds, never having even looked at the merits of a claim of wrongful conviction. The highest court in this land, U.S. Supreme Court, has even gone so far as to say, quote, the existence merely of newly discovered evidence relevant to the guilt of a state prisoner is not a ground for relief on federal habeas corpus, end quote. That rule is grounded in the principle that federal habeas courts fit to ensure that individuals are not imprisoned in violation of the Constitution, but not to correct errors of fact. Ultimately, this means that the court can be made aware of and perhaps even acknowledge evidence of someone's innocence, yet still not overturn a conviction because there was no accompanying constitutional violation where the trial court followed procedure. Those procedural rules are the crux and bane of an appellate system specifically designed to culminate in the rule of finality, which simply put means that a final decision eliminates further unneeded court proceedings and takes away any responsibility of a court to right or wrong. That said, appealable issues can occur even before a trial. As you can see, I have provided a timeline of my appeal thus far as an example of structure and order in which the appellate process proceeds through the courts. By the end, you'll also have been made aware of the sheer amount of time it takes for an indigent appellant to be heard, and far too many cases never to have been. You begin, you're charged, you're tried, you're convicted, and immediately file the first stage of appeal, which is called a direct. This is almost always denied, but nevertheless is a part of a process to assert claims of error. It is also important in that you must assert claims of every sort, whether it be procedural or constitutional violations, because you will not be allowed to during later stages. The next phase is the motion for appropriate relief, or the MAR, and supplementary MAR. Here you file claims ranging from the prosecution knowingly using false evidence to convict to ineffective assistance of counsel. back and forth arguments between the defense and the Attorney General's office as to why claims should or should not be heard by the superior or trial court, as it's called, which is the finder of fact. Our courts are not required to confirm nor dispute the facts of the case, only procedure. If your claims have merit, then the Superior Court will schedule an evidentiary hearing for claims addressing guilt, innocence, state issues, and then another on mitigating issues which only concerns sentencing. This stage of your appeal is the most important because this is where evidence of a wrongful conviction is argued. Hopefully, after thorough post-conviction investigations have been conducted by appellate attorneys. I say hopefully because they too often fail to do their jobs, just as trial attorneys do. An example of what claims having merit means is that the judge is supposed to hear argument of merit for asserting claims of error, decide whether or not they have merit, and if so, schedule the required evidentiary hearing. The judge can summarily dismiss your claims as having no merit, but after a hearing to determine merit. That's a mouthful. In August of 2021, the North Carolina Supreme Court decided in my case that the lower court erred in summarily dismissing my claims and ordered a new, quote, full and fair, end quote, guilt, innocence, state evidentiary hearing to determine whether, quote, because Allen has presented evidence which, if proven true, would entitle him to relief, we conclude that he has, end quote. Sadly, it took 4 years just for the North Carolina Supreme Court to say, do it again and do it right. All right, we are now at the second stage of the appeal, and it took me almost 15 years to get into court for the first time. This is not unusual at all, but should be a shock and a warning to most people who think this judicial system fair. All sorts of obstacles are faced, including those put up by your defense attorneys. Mine delayed so long that I had to learn some rules of court and law, enough so to file a motion to be heard when they would only offer excuses. An example of unnecessary delay and obstacle was when my appellate attorneys, with no excuse ever given to me, failed to include testimony by my lead attorney at the mitigation hearing in February of 2018, and that he knew of witnesses for my alibi, knew of a handwritten letter by the state's sole eyewitness proclaiming my innocence, and other related evidence, but, quote, didn't know how to get it into evidence, end quote. I filed a motion in December of 2018 to remove my attorneys. At that point, the Center for Death Penalty Litigation and the Appellate Defender's Office, both of which are entities with responsibilities to provide attorneys to represent the client's best interests, intervened to request the judge order a psychiatric evaluation to determine whether or not I was competent to make decisions for myself in regards to my own appeal. The state employed psychiatrist evaluated and did deem me competent and capable. So for having the audacity to assert my attorneys were doing their jobs, I was subject to this treatment. And it is an indication of the lengths they will go in order to delay and bill the state, which, by the way, at that point, 4 years ago in my appeal, had reached over $600,000. This is just the appeal and not trial costs. Anyway, the judge denied to remove the attorneys, saying they were fine attorneys, and proceeded to deny the motion for appropriate relief, as we now know was an error. After this newly ordered evidentiary hearing is conducted and a decision made, it will then return to the North Carolina Supreme Court for review and the inevitable back and forth arguments between the state and my newly appointed attorneys. My old ones finally withdrew. That's a story itself. But if the North Carolina Supreme Court denies my writ of certiorari, the next tier court court will be the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. But, and this is important, at this level, an appeal as of right is permitted only in a small class of cases, and permission is sparingly granted. If granted, the court will focus on judicial procedure and not to determine evidence as to innocence or guilt. The stated goal of the higher appellate courts is not simply to ensure that litigants in a particular case receive a fair, error-free trial, but to develop a clear, consistent, coherent body of law that can be followed and applied to the lower courts. Here, at the federal level, is when and where the great writ, as it is called, comes into play. The habeas corpus, or you have the body, is a last gasp effort, and the percentage of habeas corpus writs granted is almost negligible. You have the body means that your argument is that someone is holding you against constitutional grounds. If you can prove a constitutional right was violated during the process from arrest through appeal, you will get relief. Procedural barriers throughout the entire process are close to insurmountable and designed this way because the last thing the courts want is to admit they wrongfully convicted someone, much less put them under a death sentence. The Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act is a huge factor in keeping wrongfully convicted people locked up. No accountability for prosecutors and the police is another. Anytime any court can admit evidence of innocence, then ignore it for the sake of procedure, and finality means only that a fundamental change must happen before it's either one of you or a loved one who is subjected to this system too. My experience is that overall the courts go out of their way to delay any proceeding. The attorneys that are assigned to us, for the most part, some try and end up being discussed and leave, but a lot of them are basically just there to receive a check. You fight, you try to get in, you try to be heard, but when you hear things like even the evidence of your innocence will be ignored for procedure, again, that's difficult. That's basically, as far as I can explain, the structure of appeal, of the appellate process. Obviously, there's a lot more that goes into it over 20, even 30 years of being subjected to it, but that's the best I can explain it.
Scott, I think that's a pretty dang good explanation. Thanks for that explanation. From
the beginning to the end, and hopefully everybody knows a little bit better about the structure.
Let me ask you, do you think that the court would ever change the rule about actual innocence being a constitutional claim in itself?
It's too difficult for them to admit that wrongfully convicted people are
Thank you, Scott. I remember you said you went in 99. I think there's only two of us in this room who were born then. So you've had a big impact.
It's been a long time.
Thank you for calling.